Yo, this is P-Town's finest, representing the NEP, D. Stoudemire, and y'all know what we're talking about. No one's ready to deal
with us. Hi, this is Terry Stotts, and you're listening to the Rip City Report, a podcast that probably shoots too many three-pointers and plays zero deep. That was a little harsh.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Rip City Report. I am Joe Freeman of the Oregonian. He is Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Greetings, everybody, and greetings, Joe, and happy Friday to all of you out there, or whatever day it happens to be that you're listening to this podcast.
At one point, it was Friday, and on that day, we wished you a happy Friday.
Yeah, and if you're listening on Saturday or Sunday or Monday, happy those days, too.
Congratulations to the weekend.
Good weekend.
Yeah. Most of humans that we surround ourselves with are regular folk who work 9-to-5 kind of jobs, and so they enjoy the weekends to the fullest.
Yeah.
Now, you and I, not so much, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't. They should celebrate the weekend in our stead.
Exactly. They should go even harder because we are not going all that hard on the weekends. Yeah, and to your point, Joe, during the season, I mildly pay attention to what the date is. As far as the day of the week, I couldn't tell you.
If I didn't have a computer that had the day of the week in the top right corner, I wouldn't know what I needed to type in my story every day.
Literally. Well, and I guess I can gauge the day by kind of why my wife's mood in terms of the week. Like, I mean, Monday seems like and as the week goes on, you know, there's kind of a typical rhythm to the week. So I guess in that regard, I get it kind of, you know, in what's that called when you absorb
ethereal
something?
Osmosis?
Yeah, exactly. So
I can, speaking of wife's moods, mine is going to be fantastic today as long as she doesn't catch that bug that our child has. It's spring break for her next week.
Hey!
So it's the afternoon on a Friday. She's
awesome. Yeah, boom.
Yeah.
Out of town. Spring break. I'm glad they're getting the spring break too, even after getting all those days off for snow. I'm glad that the Portland Public Schools is making sure that everyone gets their time off.
That's
important.
You can't take those away from families. They have vacations planned and very important, fun things to do.
Well, you know, in theory, the goal of an education system should be to educate children above all else. But, you know, family vacations are important, too. So.
I will say this. My wife is ready for a break.
I bet.
She's pretty worn down. I don't know why now is a particularly good time, but she's...
Well, I think, you know, obviously you're kind of in the home stretch of the school year, much like the Blazers are in the home stretch of their regular season. The weather is not particularly nice, you know, and I think to your earlier discussion about your daughter, I think kind of people are a bit sickly this time of year. So anything where you can kind of get out of that regular space and kind of revitalize yourself, that makes sense. And I remember, too, for the 2 years that I worked in a public school, every time those breaks came around, people were ready for those breaks.
Blazers don't need a break right
now. No, they don't get
one. They're cruising. How about that? All of a sudden,
I don't know if I'd say cruising.
They're 9-3 in March,
which is good.
The third
I'm
best
glad,
record in the NBA.
You know, they again, as we've talked about all season long, I am not going to foist any turning the corners on them because again, they come home after that great trip and they lose to the Bucks. Not a bad team, but still.
Here's what I'll say to that: true, all of that's true, and I agree with you. Blazers are the third. I'm taking away one of our news and notes items, but the Blazers have the third best record in March at 9-3.
That's good.
The best are tied the Milwaukee Bucks and the Spurs.
There you go.
At 10-3. So the Blazers' one loss, or one of, you know, the loss you speak of, was to arguably the hottest team in the league, and then they beat the other hottest team in the league. So I mean, that says something.
It does. It does. I just don't want to.
I'm
not going to go
you.
There anymore.
I hear you.
Like they've ruined me for this season. Maybe next season they get off to a good start and I'll take it for what it is. But at this point, it's game to game, and I can't. I'm glad that they are playing better. I'll give them that. But outside of that, I can't go any further.
Fair enough. Well, he is Casey Holdall. You can follow him on Twitter at cHold. And you can check out his content at blazers.com/forwardcenter. Please follow me on Twitter at Blazer Freeman. And please check out mine and my colleague's stuff at oregonlive.com/blazers. If you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever, give us a review. We would love to know what you think about the show. Let's get into news and notes. The Blazers defeated the New York Knicks 110-95 Thursday night as Damian Lillard scored 30 points and had 5 assists. The Blazers improved to 9-3 in March, as we noted. It's the third best record in the NBA. Bucks and Spurs are tied at 10-3, at least heading into Friday's games.
Damian has definitely turned the corner. If there was any corner to be turned in his season, he turned it and went balls to the wall up until now and assumedly probably for the rest of the season. Just a fantastic play from Damian.
He's been ridiculous.
I will not lessen his achievements just because the team itself has been a bit inconsistent. Damian has been otherworldly.
Yeah, speaking of his achievement, he is the reigning Western Conference Player of the Week. Led the Blazers to a 3-1 record. Went nuts. 49-point effort at the Heat. Huge game against the Spurs. Really carrying this team right now from beginning to end of most games. It's been really impressive. It's really the Dame that a lot of people have come to expect. It makes me wonder a little bit, and maybe we could talk about this later, like, for all the Blazers have done, it's taken that type of run by Dame to make it happen, and you wonder, A, is that sustainable, and B, is that how you want the Blazers to be always? You know, I mean, he needs
and
help.
And was that Damian doing that on purpose to see if kind of guys would
follow?
Would follow, and they didn't, and, well, that's probably not fair, too, because Damian, you know, he had some struggles this year, too, and I wouldn't put that on him trying to take a step back and wait for other guys to kind of pick up the mantle. But at least something to consider, too, that, I mean, I think you're exactly right, Joe, that they need Damian playing his absolute best to even have a shot at this point of the playoffs. So
there you go. A couple of quick stats notes. It was the eighth consecutive game Lillard has scored at least 25 points against the Knicks.
That's good.
Yes. It's the third longest 25-point streak in franchise history, tied with teammate C.J. McCollum, who did it earlier this season, and Jeff Petrie. Petrie actually holds the record with 11 consecutive games. So Dame is still in position to take that record. Yusuf Nurkic, whose name I can now pronounce, has three consecutive double-doubles, which is a career high for him. He actually, coincidentally, has seven double-doubles in 16 games since joining the Blazers.
Hey.
Alan Crabb has made a three in 13 consecutive games, which is too shy of his career high. So there's a couple of notes to consider, stats notes to consider as you move ahead. Speaking of ahead, a look ahead at the Blazers' schedule. The Blazers host the Minnesota Timberwolves Saturday night, then visit the Lakers on Sunday. Eight of the Blazers' final 11 games are at home. Three of their final 11 games are against said Timberwolves, which makes for a very interesting closing stretch.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that here shortly, but before we do, a quick look at the standings. Blazers are in ninth place in the West, still one game behind the Denver Nuggets and two games ahead of the Dallas Mavericks. And our, I can't say annual, our weekly first round draft pick watch, the Blazers, who have three picks in the first round three picks in the first round of the NBA draft. If the season were to end today, they would have the 12th pick, the 20th pick, and the 26th pick. So there you go.
That's a lot of picks.
Yeah. So facing the Timberwolves three times in the next, boy, I don't know what the days are off the top of my head. It seems like a week to 10 days.
March 25th, April 3rd, and April 6th. So twice within 3 days, and the 25th is 31 days in March. So basically it's like 2 weeks.
Not only that, it's nuts that second week or first full week of April, the Blazers play Minnesota, Utah.
Yeah, look at that.
Four games in the same week.
One of those being the makeup, obviously, but still an interesting little wrinkle there in the schedule.
Yeah, and we talked to guys about facing the Timberwolves in such a close proximity earlier today at practice, and you kind of heard a similar refrain from Stotts and the players. It's kind of like the playoffs in a sense, where you face one team. Obviously, it's not best of seven in this case, but three times in such a close span. By the end, you know exactly what they're going to do. They know exactly what you're going to do. But I think, you know, tomorrow night's game kind of sets the tone for what may be a pretty intriguing run, because Timberwolves are a really good team.
Yeah.
They don't have a couple of their key guys who are hurt, but Karl-Anthony Towns is a phenomenal player. They have a lot of young talents, kind of a team on the rise like the Blazers, just not quite as advanced as the Blazers. And really can beat anybody on any given night in a lot of ways. So they are kind of exact opposite of the Blazers. I think 8 of their last 11 games are on the road. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of helps the Blazers a little bit, including 2 against the Blazers, or 2 in Portland. Teams played once this season. Blazers beat them I think it was 95-89 or something like that. So a relatively close game. But it'll be interesting to see. I think tomorrow night is kind of a tone setter, not only for that head-to-head, but the next 11 games.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the Timberwolves have lost 4 straight and 5 of their last 6. They play the Lakers tonight against, it sounds like the Lakers aren't playing any of their guys, which
peak tank
that
mode
doesn't really mean a whole lot right now. Yeah. But you're exactly right, Joe. They have talent, they have players who can give you problems in Towns and Wiggins, and you know, just a team too that is poised to kind of take that step. They haven't yet, and it doesn't look like this is going to be either you're going to do it, but next year, who knows? It's also interesting, too, that they have 6 division games in, like, the last couple weeks, which, you know, if divisions mattered, then that would make for a really intriguing kind of end of the season. Not that it's not intriguing already, but with the fact that divisions don't really mean anything anymore, it kind of takes some of the juice out of it, though. The Jazz, too, are so much further ahead than everyone else in the division, it probably wouldn't matter a whole lot. Division does matter in terms of tiebreakers if, you know, your head-to-heads didn't decide it, particularly for teams in division and obviously with Denver. So that in and of itself has some importance, not to get too far ahead, but that game versus Denver next week, you know, potentially will decide which team is going to go to the playoffs and which team is going to get the 14th pick in the lottery. So plenty to play for the Blazers right now. And, you know, they seem to be recognizing that and playing with the requisite intensity for the most part. Again, like they're still having some lapses. I mean, the second half of the Knicks game Thursday night, I mean, obviously, that's kind of standard fair NBA basketball. You go up big on a team, they make a rally, you still end up beating them handily. I mean, that happens in the NBA. So in some respects, extrapolating it to mean more than that is probably not incredibly wise. But this team has also been so consistent in that inconsistency that I think it probably means a little bit more. And, you know, talking to Terry Stotts after the game last night, I mean, he was like, I thought we played great in the first half, and I was rather disappointed in the way we played in the second half. So, and I mean, I think Terry's at the point, too, where, you know, he's a player's coach, but he's annoyed, I think, a bit. And I mean, I think Damian is, too. And I'm sure there's other guys in the team that are as well, but you kind of look to the leadership when you're in these situations. And I just think, you know, between Terry and Damian, I feel like there's kind of this feeling that, look, guys, this is stupid. Like, enough of this. Let's be real or let's not. Yeah. But let's stop half-stepping.
I should have mentioned in the look ahead, I guess, the Blazers, after that back-to-back, and you alluded to this shortly, after facing the Timberwolves and the Lakers, they come home to hugely important games and hugely difficult games. They host the Denver Nuggets on Tuesday, then they host the Houston Rockets on Thursday, so, and that game will be on TNT. So a really big week for this team looming ahead. And actually, I guess at this point, the whole thing is big.
Yeah, well, and like Alan Crabb said at practice day, we need to win every game.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's
a good mindset
to
have.
That's not – that he's not wrong about that either. I mean, the Nuggets are kind of going along. And that's what I've kind of noticed about this race, too, is that both teams are just kind of doing what they have been doing. Like, no one seems to be going on a big run. No one seems to be going on a huge losing streak. Some of the teams in that race have fallen off a little bit. But for the most part, it's down to the Nuggets, the Blazers, and, you know, the Mavs, and maybe the Pelicans, I guess. But, you know, it's starting to thin out a little bit there.
I will say that, I mean, winning 9 of 12 at the most important time of season, that's
a run. You're right, Joe. Especially on the road versus good teams. You know, and that's kind of the – people talked about how, you know, and you've mentioned it as well, Joe, their schedule lightening up, and it has. But when you beat San Antonio in San Antonio, the Hawks in Atlanta, and a very good Heat team in Miami, like that's a hard part of your schedule, and you won those games. So you can't just be like, well, they're doing this because of their schedule. It's like, but those are tough games, and they won those games. So it's not just a function of the schedule. Yeah.
And similarly, the Nuggets are, let's see, 6-3 in their last 9. So not terrible. And now they have
now they do have a tough schedule. They're on the road a lot. I mean, like that. Their schedule is definitely more difficult to end the season than the Blazers. I just wouldn't chalk up everything the Blazers have done to an easier schedule.
Yeah, I'm looking at their schedule really quickly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of their last 11 games are on the road. So exactly opposite of the Blazers.
That's rough.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, like, how good did you feel, Joe, getting off that last road trip?
Oh.
It was like that. That was like the
weight carry.
That,
yeah.
Exactly. Once you get that last long trip out of the way, you feel like you can start kind of really chugging. Now, for them, like, you don't get that.
As a matter of fact, they play at Indiana tonight. Then they host the Pelicans over the weekend. Then they go on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 game trip starting in Portland. From Portland, they go, well, maybe they'll go back home, but at some point they go to Charlotte, then Miami, then New Orleans, then Houston. That's a brutal April trip there. And then over their last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 games, you've got the Pelicans, you've got Dallas, and you've got Oklahoma City twice, home and on the road. Mm-hmm. So
they're going to need to win those games. So.
Yeah. Now, that is in the season finale, so it's at least possible that OKC would rest their guys. But the Blazers, I want to say, host the Spurs in one of their last games, and you know how the Spurs are. They're likely to play their bottom eight guys only in that game if things are decided.
The penultimate game of the regular season for the Blazers is versus the San Antonio Spurs May 10th. And you would imagine that the Spurs will probably be pretty well locked into whatever they're doing at that point. Though, I mean, I guess there could still be a race for the...
Yeah.
Well, at that point, they'll probably know one way or another if they're going to pass the Warriors or not.
Warriors up 3 games right now still?
Two, right.
Two.
Yeah.
Spurs been playing very well, as we noted. They Warriors have
always,
also been playing very
well.
Yeah.
God, that's incredible. Unstoppable force.
Another, I guess, person who's been playing well is Noah Vonleh. Quietly for the Blazers has really, I don't want to say he's coming to his own because it's a relatively small stretch of games. And we sort of touched a little bit on this last week. Someone asked us a question about it. But from my view, I really think Jusuf Nurkić has really opened up a lot of room for Noah. You know, I asked Noah on the last trip, is he playing the best basketball of his career? And he kind of looked at me sideways, thought, and said, well, yeah, I guess, but it's because I'm getting more minutes and I'm getting consistent minutes. But from my perspective, he's getting more minutes because he's playing well.
Yeah, it's not exactly, you know, the chicken or the egg. It's the first one is you're actually playing better basketball.
Correct.
And granted, obviously, playing more minutes is important, for particularly for young players.
Mm-hmm.
But he's actually earning his minutes now. Where before it was like he was getting those minutes because, you know, he was the young guy on the team that they were hoping to see some growth out of. And I think for the most part, they kind of felt like maybe they weren't going to get that, which is why last year, you know, it was always, you know, Noah would start, then Myers would play, then Ed was in, and Mace as well. So, like, there's never any continuity there. And while on one hand, Noah's correct that it is hard to build continuity when you're not getting a lot of minutes, he was still getting enough minutes to make an impact.
He had a defined 7-8 minute stretch each half, which since you bring that up, last season to this season is an interesting look into his development, because he had that same role last season for a very long time. And then right about the time the Blazers got hot, he lost that role. Mm-hmm. Now he has the role and the Blazers are hot. So and he's earning more minutes. So I guess in some ways that really shows the growth he's made. But, you know, I do think his game, it's easier for him to do what he does alongside Nurkić.
Absolutely.
As opposed to Mason Plumlee.
Absolutely.
Because Nurkić draws so much attention, is so versatile in that he can post you up, he draws double teams, he can pass. It just frees Noah, more space for Noah to operate. I mean, really everybody. We've talked about it with Dame, but Noah as well, and you're seeing a lot of, you know, Nurkić to Noah passes for dunks, wide open dunks, and you're seeing the things that Noah can do, the beastly rebounding, the kind of rugged play, the hustle-infused aspect of his game that really you think he should be doing all the time. You're seeing that more consistent now. Career-high 12 rebounds last game, and he's had double digits in rebounds. I'm trying to look it up right now.
Yeah, he's had a couple double-doubles, actually, in the past 4 or 5 games, which are somewhat infrequent for for young Vonleh. So
yeah, and let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Three out of the last five games, he's had double digits in scoring. Two out of the last four, he's had 11 or more rebounds. He's really having a pretty nice month and a really nice stretch lately. And you sort of see his confidence growing a little bit, him kind of settling into this role. And we've talked a little bit about it was a few months ago or a few weeks ago, it was the debate between should Myers or Noah play. And I think we both sort of agreed that what Noah brought was a little different than Myers and more important to what the Blazers needed in just the way he plays with, you know, kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but kind of doing the dirty work and kind of that hustle stuff as opposed to maybe the shooting and stuff that Myers brings. But Noah still can hit a shot, and I would say he's not been shy about taking them either.
No, and he shouldn't be, because that's why he's out there. As every player who's going to play in Terry Stotts' offense, you got to take the shots that are open. You mentioned the impact that Nurkic has had on Vonleh from a perspective of him getting easier looks, which is absolutely true. You know, before when Plumlee was on the team, and if you're starting Plumlee and Vonleh together, you know, the opposing team, the kind of the big man in that is probably going to take Vonleh, because he's, while not exactly a threat in the post, more of a threat than Mason. And Mason's going to be a guy who's going to be out kind of facilitating for other guys. So basically, he's not going to draw that bigger defender. He's probably going to draw the power forward, and Vonleh was going to be the guy who's going to get the center, for at least for teams that have standard centers. Now, that's obviously not the case. When Vonleh is matching up with guys, he's going to get the second biggest guy on the team rather than the first, because you got to throw whoever your big guy is at Nurkic. And the other part about that too is that Nurkic is also looking for Vonleh on offense as well. Like, he's on numerous occasions, he has, I don't know if I'd say set up plays, but at least looked for plays for Noah in the post. There was a play I was thinking about in particular versus Miami, where Nurkic brought the ball all the way up and pointed to the spot for Noah to go to, and it was like, post up. And then he gave him the entry pass, and Noah had a smaller man on him, and I believe he scored, or maybe if he didn't score, just the notion that he did that. And then I asked Noah about it after the game, and you could tell, like, he was not proud, but it made him happy that it was like, yeah, there was another big man that's looking for me, because, you know, he knows what it is. He knows that they're not running plays for Noah Vonleh with that lineup. So even just the kind of the look every now and then, particularly coming from a big man who could have gone into that post himself. I mean, Nurkic could have done that if he wanted to, but it's like, no, I'm gonna feed the kid here and see what he can do. Calling him a kid doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because
they're both
Nurkic
kids.
Is 22 and Vonleh is 21. So, but I think having that support from another big on the team has made a difference for Vonleh as well. Because, I mean, just the guy that Noah is, you know, like, he's kind of shy, and he's not exactly like an aggressive guy. So I think, you know, he might need a little charging up from time to time. And I think that, you know, having another big do that is a good way to go about doing it.
Yeah, I remember writing something about Noah last year and talking to Damian about him. And he sort of was so enamored with Noah's versatility and the potential of his versatility that he sort of viewed him as a sleeping Draymond Green is how he said he can be that type of player that fill that type of role for the Blazers. And, you know, you see it in stretches, but it's very inconsistent, and it definitely wanes more than not. But this is as, I guess, an extended a stretch as we've seen out of him, where it seems like he's starting to figure it out a little bit. And you can't, I don't know. It's a big deal that this is happening, because A, the Blazers invested a lot in him.
Yeah.
They traded Nicholas Batum for him. Did they trade a draft pick too?
No.
No? Okay.
Maybe there might have been a second rounder involved in that pick, but I don't think so.
And so he was the main grab in that trade. He was a guy they were – it was before L.A. left, but it was kind of about that time when they weren't sure if he was going to leave or stay, and it was kind of like, well, if he leaves, this is a guy that maybe we can pin our – future hopes to at power forward, and so far he is underwhelmed in that. He hasn't lived up to his potential, and a very high draft pick, obviously, a guy, beastly body, a lot of a versatile skill set that he has. And so for him to start to develop, for the Blazers to start to see the fruits of their labor, so to speak, it's got to make them feel good. And, you know, one thing about the NBA, and especially the current NBA, is there's no patience anymore.
No.
You want everybody to come in and be Damian Lillard from day one, and that's just not possible for every player. And so, you know, old school, a guy like Noah would have time to develop and maybe go about a natural progression. Now it's sort of the you're either it or you're not from day one, and it could be that the Blazers' patience is being rewarded, I guess.
Yeah, with so many people that comment on the NBA and do it for their livelihood or would like to do it for their livelihood, yeah, there's always you got to have takes. And, you know, like no one wants to wait a season to two seasons to see a guy do well. They want to say, this is what this guy is now, and this is what he's going to be through the rest of his career. Yusuf Nurkic being a perfect example. The guy falls out of favor, and all of a sudden he's a bum. And, you know, he switches zip codes, and all of a sudden he's great. You know, and like, that's not necessarily the player. That's the perception that everyone else has. And, yeah, like, if the long-term success of the Blazers is important to you, the long-term growth of Noah Vonleh is really important, because you're right, Joe. They got to hit on some of those guys that they made trades for, and really they got to hit on a big. I mean, I think they have in Nurkic,
yeah.
But they need some of the guys that they have in their program to play well, and then hopefully retain them, because they know that going out and getting guys in free agency is going to be tough. Trades is always going to be a mixed bag, so they need the internal development that, you know, I think Olshay talked a lot about at the beginning of last season. Before the team kind of went on the run that was somewhat unexpected, that got kind of lost in the shuffle. But the fact of the matter is, they've been talking about needing to develop their guys, and Vonleh is 1A in that. I mean, like, if Noah Vonleh can become a quality, even rotation player for the Blazers, that changes the dynamics of what they do going forward exponentially. If not, if they have to go out and find a guy at that position, do they have the space to do that? What are they going to have to get up to do that if they don't have the space? Who are they going to be able to draw in free agency anyways? And how are you going to be able to get a serviceable player in trade without trading someone that you need or an asset that you want? So, you know, it's outside of maybe, you know, the way that Nurkic has come along, it's maybe the most important thing to the Blazers going forward is whether or not Noah Vonleh can be a good player in this league.
Yeah, and they've been running, obviously, a smaller lineup with Aminu at the four and Mo playing a lot of four. This adds a different dimension. And when you look at the Blazers' roster heading into the season, there was a lot of duplication. And every coach and even GM, they want versatility and different options and different lineups you can throw at people. So to be able to rely on a guy like Noah to bring you that different option is immensely important. And
that's the way the NBA is going, too. I mean, it's going to continue to get smaller and smaller and smaller, mm-hmm. and guys like Vonleh are going to be starting on teams at center in 3 or 4 years. So having a guy that has those versatile skills, I would like to see him continue to shoot a little bit more. He's gotten away from his three-point shot.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe that was an edict or if he's just not finding himself in those situations anymore. But, I mean, with the way the league is going, having a guy who can play multiple positions as a big is very important, i.e. Noah Vonleh playing center.
Another kind of quietly positive development in last night's win over the Knicks was the play of Evan Turner, and more importantly, the comfortability of Evan Turner. Finally, a third padded brace has taken to him. At least he's taken a liking to it after, you know, joking that he was going to throw a hissy fit after trying to rip the second one off during a game and conceal it. And the first two did not go well. Let's put it that way. And his stats showed he was 4 of 21 from the field, 4 turnovers in those first three games, and really did not look comfortable, did not look good, was not effective. Lost second half minutes at one point to Shabazz Napier, I believe in the game they lost to the Bucks. So, to see him have a kind of a return to form game was certainly a positive for the Blazers. Had 10 points, 6 rebounds, made 3 of 5 shots, and had a stretch where he made 3 in a row in the first half. So, and more importantly, he kind of alluded to it a little bit that it's not just, it's a combination of things. the old Brace, he uses his palm a lot for stuff. He couldn't shoot, couldn't get a feel, couldn't grip the ball and get a feel for dribbling, had a lot of bad passes. And also, all of that weighs on your mind. And then, in addition to everything you're going through, mentally it takes over. So I feel like freed from that mental weight, perhaps you'll see him return to the way he was playing before he got hurt. We'll see.
Yeah, it seemed to me like, you know, Shabazz probably should have been getting those minutes because it didn't seem like Turner was comfortable enough to go out there and play the way that he plays. I mean, if Edwards was a catch-and-shoot guy or, you know, a post-up guy, a guy who didn't operate with the ball in his hands, you know, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But the fact that, you know, he's 75% of Evan's game on the offensive end is dribbling and trying to get other guys going, I mean, that's tough to do when you got a, you know, an inch and a half piece of gauze over your palm. So he did play better the other night. It seems like he's getting to the point where it's not going to be as much of an issue. That brace is it's not so much a brace as it's just basically, I don't know if people have seen, I mean, players wear it all the time now. It's like a sticky pad that basically has some cushioning on the top of it, and that's about it, you know? So they're just trying to stop anything from getting a direct hit and also having his fingers taped together so they don't get pulled back as much as maybe that's how the injury got caused in the first place.
Yeah, it sounds like his bone is 70 to 75% healed. So I assume that all of this is to add protection to
yeah.
that.
No, so, totally. Yeah. And I mean, you take whatever precautions you can. If it sustained a really hard hit or if it got bent back in some way or another, who knows? But luckily that hasn't happened and hopefully it won't.
Should we get on to questions?
Let's do questions, Joe.
All right. First up from Matt Paluska. And again, we solicit questions usually on Twitter the evening before we record a podcast or the morning that we do record the podcast. So if you're not following us on Twitter, you should, so you can ask us questions. And for you people who aren't on Twitter and you really want to ask a question, you can always send us emails.
Yeah,
and
totally.
We've asked some email questions along the way, so don't be bashful. First up from Matt Paluska, what's the weirdest thing you've seen in Portland? Oh dear,
that's off the jump, Joe.
Yeah, it was listed accordingly. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a very. I'd have to put some thought into that.
Well, even saying weird, it's like, are you even allowed to say that? I mean, because I've seen some things that, to me, strike me as fairly odd, but maybe they're not to other people, or that's a protected class or something. I don't know. So,
some things you just can't say, too. Like,
yeah,
you can't,
well, and I guess that's what I'm getting at. Like,
you know what I think is weird? It might not be the weirdest thing, but the bikes that people ride that are like
the tall bikes,
the 10
sure.
foot high bikes,
yeah.
Like. I guess the theory behind that is that they can see everything
mm-hmm.
in front of them. But
that is the theory.
That just seems weird to
seems
me.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Seems
weird.
Hard to get on and off of, I would
seems
agree.
Seems like you're trying too hard is how
oh,
I put
it's
it.
Definitely try hard. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's – I mean, yeah, when you're riding a bike like that, you want everyone to know that you're riding a bike like
yeah.
that. I mean, there's no two ways around it. It's like driving a Ferrari around, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, do you really need it? No. But I want people to pay attention to me,
yeah.
So I'm going to ride it.
So I don't know if that's the weirdest thing I've seen, but that comes to mind. So I'll just say that is a weird thing.
I mean, and I guess what I'm getting at, too, like I've seen people who look like they're potentially in a mental health crisis doing all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah.
You know,
and
so
yeah.
that's – I mean, I don't even know what the proper way to talk about that is, so I just won't.
Okay. Next up from Deloitte's, if Noah is the starter long term, where will he need to see the most growth? Also, what is your favorite cheap taco in Northeast? Let's do this one at a time. Let's talk basketball and then tacos.
Okay. So what does Vonleh need to do to what? To the what?
If he's the long term starter, what will he need to do? Where will he need to see the most growth? I mean, it seems simple, but I just think consistency.
Consistency, and I would say defending multiple positions
yeah.
as well.
Which he's done fairly
yeah.
well at.
Yeah.
They at least trust him to do it on the switches and stuff. And that's where Dame's thing about him being like a Draymond Green comes into play, is if he can do that. And we saw this with Aminu and Mo, their interchangeability against the Clippers last year and oftentimes this season is you can't make up for that if without it. So you're right. That would be, I think,
I think adding a consistent three-point shot. Not that he's going to get a whole lot of them, but if he's able to stretch the floor out to the three-point line, that would go a long way towards helping things for everyone else on the roster that he's playing with, particularly Damian, CJ, and Nurk.
Now a favorite cheap taco in Northeast. Angel Food and Fun comes to mind.
Yeah, is that Northeast or North?
That's Northeast.
Angel Food and Fun would have been my first one.
Stella Taco on Alberta is pretty cheap too, and they're good. They're like I think they call them Austin style tacos.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, it's still they're just tacos. They're good.
I mean, tacos are usually cheap. If you're buying expensive tacos, you're buying the wrong tacos. Like, I mean, a taco. If you're paying more than $1.50 for a taco, you're getting ripped off.
I disagree because I love Porque No, and they're more than $1.50. My favorite.
I'm sticking
taco.
By it then.
Yeah. Angel Food and Fun's your answer?
Yeah, I'll say Angel Food and Fun. And only because, too, the place I go to are in North Portland.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz, too. Yeah. King Burrito. Supposedly, Colin Romer, who recently moved into the Kent neighborhood, says that I don't recall exactly what it's called, but he says that there's a taco place that's next to the Eagle PDX, which. I would not suggest you enter unless you are prepared. supposedly, he says that place has really good tacos and really good breakfast burritos, too. So,
Ole Frijole on 42nd and Killingsworth in Northeast. That's a go-to burrito spot for me. I would assume they have good tacos. I always get burritos there, so I don't get their tacos. But their food is good and very inexpensive.
Yeah.
You can get a burrito for like $5.
That's good.
Yeah, and it's good. Okay, next up, let's stick on the food tip here. Selly wants to know what our favorite bread, peanut butter, and jelly is for PB&Js. This obviously stems from the ESPN story about the NBA's infatuation with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and where it came from and all that. It's actually a very fun read. I would highly recommend you reading it. Came out last week. Baxter Holmes, I think, wrote it.
Old Baxter. I even pushed him in the right direction there for a couple of the Blazer things. So
did you?
I'm going to take a very small slice of credit for that story. Yeah. To answer your question, when it comes to PB&J, you know, I don't mind all kinds of different options. I mean, if I'm going like 100% like what I would prefer
make at home,
yeah, I prefer some kind of. I don't like white bread particularly, so some kind of mild wheat, not with all the seeds and whatnot in it. Creamy. I used to eat crunchy all the time, but have since drifted away from it. And then some kind of berry. I prefer preserves or jam to jelly. So I'd say probably a blackberry or marionberry jam as well.
Okay.
With crust.
We're very similar.
Yeah.
Except I do the crunchy.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm spacing on the brand, the well-known organic.
Adams?
Adams.
Yeah.
I'm an Adams crunchy guy.
When I was a kid, we only ate Adams, and that's why I probably don't eat it at all now, because just the whole, you got to stir it and your hand gets all oily.
Yeah.
To hell with that.
I've got my system down on that. And then you put it in the fridge, you don't need to stir it anymore. But that's funny because we're opposite. When I was a kid, it was always Jif or Skippy.
Never got any of that stuff when I was a kid. Yeah, so basically you end up eating what you didn't get when you were a kid, I guess.
So I'm an Adams chunky guy, and then a nice, I agree with you on the jelly, a blackberry or a marionberry. Those are what I prefer. I usually get an organic kind of a thing. I could list six different companies, but I don't need to give them props.
I will the Portland Bakery, those long
brands?
Loaves that they sell.
Oh, the Portland
Bakery. Yeah. I like those for peanut butter and jelly as well. They're a little... They're not as dense, but it's a good sandwich bread. Yeah,
I mix up my bread. I like Dave's Killer Bread, some of their wheat varieties. But I also like a sourdough, so I'll do a sourdough as well.
See, and I don't mind sourdough with peanut butter and jelly. My wife hates it, though. So whenever I kind of almost always gravitate towards getting sourdough because I really like sourdough toast. But she's not feeling it on peanut butter and jelly. And she eats a fair amount of PB&J, too. So.
And I'm a slightly toasted guy. I put bread in there. It doesn't get hard. It warms it up a little bit. And
my lips are sensitive to toasting. So, like, particularly with warm sandwiches, too. I love hot sandwiches. But if the crust is too... It
too
ends up
crunchy.
Giving me, like, blisters. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... It's slightly toasted, so it doesn't get that crazy
for me. Joe. I'm weak.
Corbina Smith wants to know, what's the best Superchunk album? I don't even know what Superchunk is, so I can't answer that question.
Superchunk's a band, but...
if you say so.
Yeah. I think kind of 90s grunge influenced.
That's my jam back in the day. Okay, Brandon Goldner wants to know, does the team's energy behind the scenes feel substantially different these last few weeks than earlier in the season?
No. I would say it is not. I do feel like they're a bit more pissed off, But that would be the change that I feel like I've noticed is just some aggravation, positive aggravation, I guess. But as far as like energy level, no, not really.
I disagree a little bit. I see the same camaraderie, the same closeness. It's always been a tight team. But I do sense quite a bit more confidence, and it's from top to bottom on the roster, more or less. When you're winning, when you've won 9 of 12, when most of the guys are more consistently playing well, I think that's a natural thing. And I think it starts with Dame, who's playing his best basketball of the season, and it just kind of trickles down. And so I do think there's quite a bit more confidence oozing around the locker room, if you will. Next up from Trevor, if the Blazers play the Warriors in the playoffs, do you think Nurkic's size plus his pick-and-roll ability with Dame and CJ would give the Warriors problems?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess, is Trevor talking about will the Blazers give the Warriors problems or just this aspect of the Blazers? I guess he's probably poking at a
I think
larger...
he's talking about that kind of in particular. What I would say is that I feel like teams are much better at going small and making you go small than they are at going big and making you go big. So my concern would be that, as we saw in the game versus the Bucks, you know, they put Draymond at 5. That's a bad matchup for Nurkic. I mean, like, that he can't chase that guy around the perimeter. So it basically becomes a situation where you have to decide who's are you going to match who they're putting on the floor, or are you going to try to make them conform to you? And I just feel like, particularly in the modern NBA, it's much more difficult to make a team react to your big than it is for them to react to your smaller lineup.
I do think that Nurkic's addition gives the Blazers a better chance against the Warriors and will allow them to play better, just because for all the reasons we've talked about over the last 5 podcasts or whatever. But I still think the Warriors are an overwhelming favorite should that series occur.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So Dan Okerman wants to know, actually, there's two. Dan Okerman and Greg Brock have similar questions. Would we, essentially, they want to know if the Blazers make the playoffs, would we rather it be a Warriors series or a Spurs series? Would we rather be in San Antonio
Warriors,
or the Bay Area?
Absolutely.
No question, Warriors. Yeah.
I mean, I think either series is going to be an incredibly tough series to win. San Francisco is obviously much closer than San Antonio. No offense to San Antonio, because it is actually a nice town, but I much prefer San Francisco. Did I say it's a shorter flight? Potentially family can join because you're going to be there for a while. I have found that I'm getting screwed over tax-wise by covering games in California consistently, so that's a bummer, one that would not exist in Texas, but that's a small thing. So, and I wouldn't want to, as we've talked before, I don't want to do the whole LaMarcus storyline thing. So.
Yeah, you more or less covered it. For me, traveling to San Antonio is a nightmare because of the difficulty of traveling commercial, so it's a longer, more difficult travel. Very easy flight to San Francisco. Lots of good stuff to do in San Francisco. Both arenas are more or less horrible to work in from a working standpoint.
Oracle's way better to work in, though, because their wireless actually works.
That's true.
And it's not a nonstop cavalcade of aggression on your ears with music being played nonstop.
But you have to walk through Manhattan at rush hour to get from your media seat down to the media room.
That's true.
It's like a
and
a lot of folks.
Super handsy security staff there too, and
yeah, they are the worst.
Though I feel like I've made some personal inroads with some of the security at Oracle, so I feel like maybe they would stop trying to big time every single time you try to do your job. But
them and Miami are definitely the worst in the league.
Miami, see your pass? Can I see your pass? Can I see your pass?
Yeah, so Miami, you get every arena you go through a metal detector, and they check through your bag. And some arenas are more diligent than others. You do both of those things in Miami. Then they check your pass, and they give you your pass. Then you go inside through after all this, and you get your bag sniffed by a bomb-sniffing dog. And then there are roughly 12 checkpoints around the arena in which they check your badge every single time throughout the game. And if your badge... it doesn't matter if it's turned around or faced forward. If it's turned around, they say, can you flip that over for me? If it's facing them, they say, can I get a closer look at that? And it is literally, you will walk from the media room to the court countless times a day, and they will check or a game, and they'll check your badge every time.
And before we get complaints, people saying, you guys are complaining, it would basically be like if you came to a Blazer game, and every single time you got out of your seat, someone was like, let me see your ticket.
Let me see your ticket. Yeah, can I get you to turn that ticket around?
Look, I got in the building. Like, did you think I broke in through the ceiling and went, you know, Mission Impossible style?
Also, you just saw me 3 minutes ago.
Yeah,
I walked by you 3 minutes ago. Anyway, it's late in the year.
It's a power move.
For Grumpy. Yeah. Next up from Jordan, will Nurkic get a long-term extension this offseason?
You know, I was trying to figure out his contract situation. I don't know if he's up for one this offseason.
I think it'll be like the Mason Plumlee last year and the Myers-Leonard before it, in that he will be in his fourth year of his rookie contract, which means you will have an exclusive negotiating window to extend him. However, it won't be in the offseason. It would be in training camp, I believe, when that window opens.
I believe you are correct. So I think the cutoff date for that is
the 31st.
31st of
October. 31st.
So, I mean, technically that goes into the regular season.
Yeah, I guess.
So. And who knows if that'll change at all, if they're going to move the season up and so on and so forth. But
tough to say.
Exactly. It is tough because on one hand, you would assume that, I mean, his value is obviously going up. And if your assumption is he's going to continue to play well, I think you probably want to get him locked up now rather than have him go into restricted free agency. But I don't know how that plays in terms of luxury tax and when you have money to spend. I mean, the players don't have any money.
It wouldn't impact this season or next season, obviously, because it wouldn't kick in until the following season.
Yeah, but I know that sometimes if you sign an extension, that doesn't necessarily – I mean, obviously the money doesn't kick in, but, like, there are rules about do after that and trading that contract. I mean, as people know, everyone was gung-ho about trading CJ for some reason, and the fact that he'd already signed his extension makes it more difficult. And I mean, basically, I think they probably want to secure what very little flexibility they have, but long story short, I mean, they need to keep him.
Another thing to consider, and I'm just throwing this out there, it's been 16 games, and it will be 27 games at season's end, not including the playoffs. So, you know, he's been phenomenal. I don't want to shortchange what he's been able to do. He seems like a perfect fit for this roster and for this organization, for an organization that has chased a center for decades, forever. Sabonis, obviously, I guess, had a nice little run late in his career. So at least from then. But it is and will be 27 games. So I don't know. Do you mortgage the future off that short thing? Or do you watch him play another full season and then you still control his rights and you can match him afterwards? So you'd have to get inside Neil Olshay's head to think about that, and I don't know the answer, to be honest.
And it also depends. I mean, if Nurkic thinks that he's just scratching the surface, no, he's not going to want to sign a deal because he's going to want to have a full season.
Yeah.
Exactly. But if he thinks that, you know, if he's just secure being here and he just wants to be in Portland now, and, I mean, they're obviously – he's going to get – I mean, he's going to get a good contract. He's a big in the NBA who
– has lots of talent.
Chew gum and walk at the same time, so he's gonna do all right. But it's, you know, there's kind of positives and negatives for both sides, and it sure doesn't seem like guys, unless you're a max verifiable max guy, are doing those extensions much anymore, because, you know, particularly with the way things have gone over the past couple seasons, there's no reason to, because guys are getting paid out the wazoo. But you assume that at some point in time that's maybe gonna slow down, so maybe that changes the decision making on the Nurkic front. Who knows?
You do wonder about a guy who's from Bosnia. I don't know what his upbringing or background is like as far as financial, the way that goes. But also, he was at a crossroads in his career just weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you wonder how that plays, because he had a great rookie season, then he kind of fell out of favor, had an injury. So he does have a lot to consider when making these decisions. Do you want financial security immediately, or do you want to chase a bigger payday later? And bottom line is it's a little too early to start speculating about all that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Next up from Michael Morris, who is 100% healthy right now?
Probably,
no one.
Probably no one, yeah.
No,
I mean,
one.
That's what everyone says this time of year. No one is healthy. You go out and play.
Yeah, no one. The closest players, I would guess, are the guys who don't play. Pat, Jake, maybe.
Yeah.
But they go hard behind the scenes, you know, so they're playing – Not anywhere near as hard as during games, but I think no one is the correct answer.
Yeah, but no one fighting bad injuries right now either. Obviously, Ed is out for the season, and Festus is, you know, that just didn't happen. But
Ed is the perfect example, isn't it? We didn't even know he was hurt last year, and he had a shoulder injury this time of year.
True enough. Yeah, that's a good point, Joe.
Next up from Harrison Sam, what are the best east side and west side Portland suburbs?
Well,
I don't spend a lot of time in the suburbs.
Nor do I.
I have some very dear friends that live in Tigard, so but I go to their home if I go out there. And we go to the PF, which is in Tualatin. We spend time there, but that's a drive there and back. Casey lives in North Portland. I live in Northeast Portland. So I don't spend a lot of time.
I don't mind any of them. I think they're all right. I mean, is Sandy a suburb?
Sure.
I'd say Sandy because it's close to the mountain and it's a little more kind of in line with where I grew up at. I guess on the other side, I got love for my Hispanic brothers and sisters. So maybe Hillsboro.
I figured you'd say Newburgh. You're one.
Well, I don't consider Newburgh a suburb of Portland yet. It's probably getting there, but 45 minutes down I-5 to me, that's still. To me, Tualatin is. I wouldn't even consider Sherwood a suburb, though a lot of people would. It is in Washington County, I guess.
I'll say Clackamas because I have some close friends who live in Clackamas, and a matter of fact, they own a very good growler bar that you should definitely visit called Valley Growlers. It's by the New Seasons there. I don't know any of the street names or numbers, so I can't help you out there. But they always have a great tap, probably 20 or 30 beers on tap. Great place to hang out. And I've spent some time at their house, swam in their pool. Mm-hmm. So I'll say Clackamas to give them some shout-out. I guess I have to give my other friends some shout-out and say Tigard. But I really don't. I just don't hang out in the suburbs.
One thing I will say, I guess, is I found myself – my wife and I, when we first moved to North Portland, we didn't go to Vancouver once for anything. 7 years. And now, it's become a more common thing for us to – we always go to movies in Vancouver because the movie theater Vancouver is close to our house and no one ever goes there, so you can always get seats. And the culinary fair in Vancouver is starting to improve as well. So it's just a quick jaunt over the bridge to Vancouver. It's definitely the closest suburb to Portland, at least for us, so – Vancouver's got some charms.
Okay, next up from David DeVrind. He says apparently that Casey posted about Spitz, a new Donner kebab spot.
Oh, I did.
He says it's really good. Have you two gentlemen dined there yet?
I've had it. It was good. It wasn't necessarily like the Donner that I remembered having in Germany in my years right after college traveling the continent. So in that regard, I was a little disappointed, and particularly, I guess there's a cart that, once again, Colin Romer says is top shelf Donner kebab. So, but it was good. I thought it was maybe a little bit overpriced, but in Portland now, that's becoming more and more common now. It's like there's no every meal that you sit down and have a drink is going to cost you $50 now, I feel like. So it was good. I would definitely eat there again. The fact that it is right next to Old Gold is, I'm sure, a bonus for both them and the Old Golders.
Another place you should check out.
It was good.
I haven't been there, so I can't say. No, to answer your question, I haven't been there.
Whole stretch right there, though, is kind of blowing up a little bit, too.
It's a good spot.
Yeah, there's that Milk Glass Market that's there as well. Yep. Also overpriced, but good.
Good breakfast sandwiches. Yeah. Obviously, our friends at Old Gold are there. And there used to be the Hop and Vine there, which I guess has something new.
My wife went to the place that replaced Hop and Vine yesterday. She said it was great.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I love that back patio there.
She said it was better than Hop and Vine. So.
Oh, cool. Okay, we've got time for a couple more. Connor Neal, is Vonleh's improved play a direct result of Nurkic? We talked about that. Mike McCord, I know this is a while off, but has the organization discussed playing a preseason game at a nearby university? To my knowledge, they haven't. Neal Olshey likes to keep things pretty consistent.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they're going to stray too far from the Moda Center and or the Memorial Coliseum if they do some kind of throwback. So to my knowledge, they haven't.
I'm trying to think, I guess they played the game in Colorado at University of Colorado 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, it was
obviously
like four
this
or five.
This is, was it? No.
At least three. At least
maybe
three.
Maybe three tops. Can't be more than three.
And then they did the 1 year in Ontario. They played at some random.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Ontario,
California, by the way.
Exactly. You're right, Joe. For whatever reason, they're just not interested in like doing the international thing. Not for whatever reason. It's particularly for preseason. It's kind of a pain in the ass.
I think it sets teams back a little bit.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
Okay, next up from Jared Cowley. Let's see. Which team has a brighter future considering the current roster and assets? The Blazers or the Nuggets?
Well, I know Nikola Jokic is great, and people are over the moon about him, and I think that's wonderful, and he's a very good player. But I'd still take what the Blazers have over them. Now, granted, I think the biggest area that the Nuggets have the advantage is in financial flexibility. But again, what do you do with that, particularly in a place like Denver? That again, it's not necessarily a place you're really drawing the top flight free agents. So I would take Portland's roster, but it's pretty close, and I think the Nuggets have a lot of really good pieces.
Here's what I would say. I agree that I think I would prefer the Blazers roster, and let's not forget they have three first round draft picks too, so they have a lot of flexibility. Youngest team in the NBA. Let's not forget that. But also they, as of right now, have a proven year after year bona fide star. They have another guy, and that's obviously Damian Lillard. They have another guy in CJ who is now in his second year of proving that he is a prolific scorer. And so I think their pieces are better on the roster top to bottom. However, you do have to love the Nuggets' financial situation a lot better. The Blazers are tied into some contracts that a lot of people rightfully question. But talent-wise, I think they have a better roster, and they have three first-round picks. So I would probably go with the Blazers as it is right now.
They got a good future there in Denver.
Oh, for sure.
They're going to be on the come up.
Fun to watch. Yeah. Talented team. Lots of good young talent and some money to burn, too.
Yeah.
So, lastly, from Max Braley, any Colorado spring break trip song recommendations? Oh.
What?
sounds like he's going to Colorado for spring break, and he wants to know if we have any recommendations of music for him to listen to.
Okay.
Boy, I don't have any off the top of my head.
Dude,
I really don't.
A non-music guy. Like, I just don't really listen to that much music.
I listen to Apple Music, and I tend to listen to a lot of the same stuff. And if I don't, I don't know what I'm listening to. It's just, you know, if I do the For You or whatever, and I don't. So I don't got anything for you, Max. I'm sorry, I don't.
Yeah, boy.
I wish I had something.
Listen to music, though. Or listen to local radio, too. I've been finding it. I never used to radio before, and I found that in our current political climate, I'm less and less interested in listening to news radio, which is typically what I would do. So I have been listening to more kind of local radio stations.
Problem is,
like,
he can't
rock.
Do that if he's on a long
No, but that's
drive.
The thing. That's how you pick up the local color of where you're at, is by listening to the stations that are in that area.
Well,
now, granted, a lot of them have become conglomerates, and they don't even get
to program their
music.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if he's driving in back roads to get there,
well,
and he's going to have fuzzy.
It's radio. It's not like he's driving through, you know, the Amazon or anything like that. I mean,
I guess I need to know if he's flying to a city and then he's driving around that city, or if he's driving from Portland to Colorado, because if he's taking, you know, the
I feel pretty
road,
confident that he's going to have radio coverage for most of the time.
I think I would probably do podcasts a lot of, or
so I was going to say explicitly don't listen to podcasts
except for this one,
of course.
You know, my wife and I did a road trip from here to California a couple years ago, and we did we listened to an entire book on tape.
Oh,
yeah, an Audible. Yeah, so that was good. And I just found out it's being made into a movie here, too.
Oh, what?
On the name of the book. Dang it. It's like The Circle.
Oh, right, with Tom Hanks. I saw it when I went to Logan. Yeah.
The book was really good. The movie looked okay.
Which, by the way, since we're mentioning podcasts, I noticed Willamette Week does a thing every year where they have a Best of Portland, and one of them is Best Podcast. You have to have your submission in by the 31st. I will send in one for the Rip City Report myself, but if any of you loyal listeners out there wanted to send it in for us so I could at least look like
decent,
slightly less self-promoting, that would be fantastic, because I do think we do a good podcast here.
We do, and I didn't know that, but now I will also send in my own thing. I would have asked at the top of the podcast if I had known that that was a thing.
Well, I did forget about it, which I think goes to show that I'm not,
you're not that
putting too
it,
much importance on it. But again, you know, it's never a bad thing to expand the listenership a little bit.
Indeed. And as always, thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. We will be back with the next pod next week, and we'll have a little bit more clarity perhaps on the whole playoff race. So enjoy the next few games, and we'll talk to you again next week.
is force the tempo, 50-point lead by halftime. Watch Rasheed Wallace keep smashing the baseline. Go left, go right, 360 degrees. Here comes a paint, Kobe.
Flipping and he's popping a three.
Try and catch him coming down the court. Bonzi Wells, what a handle. It's amazing what he do for the sport. Damon Stoudemire saves the day, a.k.a. Mighty Mouse. Gonna show all of you scrubs how to play. What a show. Why the Lakers even want it with us, you know?
No one's ready to deal with us.